Board Meeting with Nat, where new leadership meets the waves of change. Dive with me into discussions on personal development, on transformation, a salty format, captivating, motivating stories and interviews with industry leaders and inspiring personalities. I'm your host, Natalie Kirkoroglu. Today we have another thrilling episode. With me in the studio is Jesper. He has many hats. He is a social entrepreneur. He is a podcast host. He is also a successful host of vision retreats. And today we will talk about your life vision and his recipes for a good life. But before, I want to tell a funny story how we met, because this is very special. We both were on an expedition boat on our way to Antarctica when we found out we're from the same village. We have common friends. So that's really, really funny, right? Small world. And now today, from Antarctica to Ericeira.
Thank you, Natalie, for this introduction, and thank you for having me. It's such a funny thing in life, right? That these serendipities keep coming, that we met in Antarctica. And now we're in this podcast house. So thanks for having me.
How does it feel in warm Ericeira?
Really happy to be living here. I spent a lot of time in Amsterdam, and then I went on a four-year nomadic journey. It was kind of my big dream at some point to be free from location and time and have this nomad life. But at some point I got tired, and I was longing more for community and having a little bit more stability. I think I found my home, and I really like the community here.
Tell us a little bit about your background. You have so many hats on, right?
It's always interesting trying to define what it is that you do. I've had this conversation with more people recently. That's not always easy when you're entrepreneurial at heart, and it always changes, right? But if I had to define it, I started my working life in strategy consulting. And then I have been an entrepreneur for more than 10 years. So I founded a travel business, a co-working space company, and also a network in Amsterdam to connect entrepreneurs. The common thread has always been to support people in realizing their dreams or their vision. So whether it's to explore the world, whether to set up new businesses, whether it's to make a social impact. And nowadays, I'm also a podcast host and a retreat leader. And recently, I reflected on what it is that I like. I really like to understand what motivates people, what drives people, and also asking people questions to get them closer to their dreams. And that can have different forms, you know. But also as an entrepreneur, it's important to surround yourself with people with certain talents, and also motivate them by asking them relevant questions. In the past, I had these maybe 5-year strategic plans. Like, you know, you've also been a consultant. That's how you learn. But nowadays, I want to create a bit more from serendipity and kind of seeing what emerges. And with my new project, Soul Kitchen, I also don't have any investors. I don't have business partners. So it's basically me alone, but I do create with a lot of people. But because of this, I have the freedom to see what comes.
Love that. You're really a pro in podcasting. You have over 70 episodes with your Soul Kitchen podcast, where you are interviewing people about their recipe for a good life. Mm. I really love that. And now I'm very interested, what is your personal recipe for a good life?
Thank you for asking that. I want to say that I feel I still have a lot to learn in podcasting. So even though I have many episodes, I don't consider myself a pro yet, because I think I can improve my branding, maybe collaborating with the studio. So there are still many things I have to learn, as a disclaimer. But having said that, my recipe for life, I would summarize it, is follow your curiosity. I feel when you follow your curiosities in the moment, it always leads you to the next thing. So as an example, this Antarctica expedition, I was really curious about it without really knowing what it will bring me. And I met incredible people there like yourself. And now I'm sitting in the studio. So I think that's an example. And I feel also talking about vision, sometimes people overanalyze the implications of a certain move. Maybe they think, if I do this, maybe it's not good for my career. Or if I take a few months off or I don't make money, I will have financial troubles. Or what will other people think about it? So sometimes I feel people maybe don't have this freedom to choose because they have too much of a long-term view. But I feel that when you follow your curiosities, the next things will always come. And in this recipe, I've also been inspired by Elizabeth Gilbert, the known writer who wrote Eat, Pray, Love. And she also wrote The Big Magic about creativity. And she says, you know, your generation, I mean, I'm 37, you know, stop looking for your purpose too much, you know, just follow your curiosity in the moment. And one of my curiosities in the moment is podcasting.
Yeah, that's why you're here.
That's why I'm here. Yeah. So that's my recipe.
And if you put it into a, like when you say a dish, what would it be? What's your favorite dish?
That's an amazing question. I really like sushi. What I like about sushi, it has these different types of flavors. Mm-hmm. You can kind of pick and choose. Not like one big dish, but it's like these different ingredients that you can pick and choose from.
So the recipe for a good life is the sushi of creativity.
I think that's a good summary.
That's a cool title for a movie or a book.
Yeah, the sushi of creativity. It's
awesome.
I never thought about it, but it's,
I love this. You mentioned somewhere on your website you have interviewed more than 300 entrepreneurs. Which guest surprised you the most, and what did you take out from that interview that somehow changed your perspective? Is there one interview that was really like, wow, okay, this really changed my mindset or shifted something in me?
One interview that stuck with me was with Eric Edmeats. He's a world-renowned public speaking teacher, and he's also a serial entrepreneur. So he worked in Hollywood. He designed WildFit, this body transformation program. He also has a public speaking academy. And he told me, never underestimate the power of your own personal experiences. Because your own personal experience, maybe your parents divorced, or maybe you've lost like 10 kilos, or maybe you've had the alcohol addiction in the past and now you live a sober life. These personal experiences, they can be very meaningful for other people. And you can, if you want to become a public speaker, start talking about your own experiences. If you want to start a business, you know, create something from your own experiences. And I think sometimes when people are looking for their next business idea, or maybe they want to talk about stuff on podcasts, maybe they don't realize how important your own experiences are. And I started to implement some of these teachings, because on my podcast, there's also some solo episodes where I share about my own life experiences. But it was a step-by-step process before I had the courage to do it. Because when I interview other people, there's also still part of me is hiding because I'm highlighting the other person. Like, look, I'm interviewing this person, I'm interviewing this person. But now I'm also stepping into this confidence where sometimes I start to share my own experiences. And I think it was definitely inspired by him.
Beautiful. So it's also about authenticity, I would say, in storytelling, right?
It's authenticity.
So like being you and putting yourself out there and telling your story.
Yeah, indeed. So it's really shifting from thinking about what other people want to hear, or thinking, oh, I'm not yet ready to share this because first I need to have a TED talk, or first I need to have written 3 books, to being authentic, like, this is my life, this is what I've experienced, and it's up to the other person whether they find it useful, but you can touch the people that it resonates with.
This podcast is about change, right? And change is constantly happening in our lives. And I know your background, you came from the corporate world. You changed from a consultant to an entrepreneur. And I'm very curious about this transformation and how it felt for you and what advice you would give to people that are in this transition, not necessarily to become an entrepreneur, but to change their lives in some areas.
Yeah. If I look back, I've changed a few times, and I think transitions are always an opportunity for growth, for discovery. So when I look back at my life, these moments are not always easy, but in hindsight, they're pretty exciting, because when you change, you have new opportunities, new discoveries. In my case, so I started my career at McKinsey. So I worked there from 2010 to 2013. And I think part of my background is career oriented, or family that values, let's say, achievement. So for me, McKinsey, I think I wanted to prove it to the world that I could get in, reach kind of the top of the corporate world. But I quickly found out that it was not my place. And I also found out that the clients that they were serving, I didn't feel at home there, maybe working for an insurance company or an oil and gas company. Also, the work itself, making these analyses, I didn't feel like suitable to me. But at the time, in hindsight, it's easy to reflect on it. But at the time, it was challenging because I also didn't know and what else was there. And I also think I didn't do a good job there because I was not in my strength. I was not in my right place. So I also had self-doubt. Why is this not working? Until that point, I always had been, you could say, maybe successful in certain things. So it was a new experience for me. And I think it taught me a lot also that you can only flourish when you're in the right place. And for me, during my time at McKinsey, I started to read startup books. I read a book called The $100 Startup. It's a book about how you can start a business with $100 in starting capital. So he interviewed all these people that had started with very little money. I started to read The 4-Hour Workweek of Tim Ferriss.
That was the classic. I love that.
The classic. At the end of my McKinsey time, I did a project with the Amsterdam School of Creative Leadership. It's a school for creativity, and I really felt inspired, and I really felt I was in the zone again. I also joined a startup biking tour in Amsterdam where I got to know all these startups. So step by step, I started to see that this is where more feel at home. And I also had the longing to wear the same clothing in my private life and in my business life. So with McKinsey, but also a lot of other corporations, you have this suit culture. You also have this office culture, you know, how was your weekend? And then you start on Monday and then you're done on Friday. But I think deep down, I knew that I wanted a freer life where I could decide every day what I'm going to do. Like what we're doing today is a perfect example of what I like. You know, let's create something together and then you do it. But I think when I entered this startup world, a whole new world opened and I actually realized it's more a world for me. It's freer, it's creative. I mean, still a lot of talented people work there. And then I just got very motivated to make it happen. I don't think I had a lot of fears around finances because I was quite young and I didn't have a family or a mortgage or all these things. So I was more motivated, you know, maybe I can make some money that people stay in my room with Airbnb. I can maybe sleep in my parents' house or at these creative ways of reducing my costs. And I was kind of motivated to make it happen. I think in hindsight, I did way too many things alone. So I think setting up a business is quite a lot of effort. But I was like, oh, I'm going to conquer the world. I'm going to do this alone. And I also didn't have the money to pay people. So you end up doing alone. But I don't think that's the right starting point.
So it's good to collaborate, to find people, to do something together.
I think so. I mean, let's look at the, I think McKinsey is in many ways a phenomenal organization. But if you look at the corporate world, there's a great infrastructure. But then when you're on your own, even though maybe you want to live a free life, I think it's still very important to build this infrastructure. But maybe in the beginning, there's no money, but you can still maybe find creative ways. Otherwise, I think it's a big transition from like having this incredible infrastructure to like being on your own. And I think for me at that time, I had stress, you know, just drinking too much coffee, working too much. So it was a big transition that I think should not be underestimated because, yeah, it's quite a difference from having a monthly paycheck to like not knowing what's coming. But you asked also for recommendations, right, in this change?
Yeah, I mean, you described it a bit also like taking little steps, right? Coming slowly to the point of change. Yeah. This is what I heard from your story as well. Doing this course, connecting with startups, reading these books, preparing actually for the change.
Yeah.
It sounds like this, like little steps that bring you forward, but not like a radical thing. This is already a good advice, I think.
I think it's a great summary. It's important, I think, to clarify what you don't want.
But I think that's easier for most people to really define what they don't want than to define what do I really want.
Yeah. But it's important to know, you know, what do I don't want? So for instance, for me, I don't know, working in a suit is something that I don't like. So
I work in a wetsuit.
You work in a wetsuit, I know.
It's just a matter of perspective, right?
But it's about, you know, reading books, meeting people. What I also really like is having coffee meetings with people that are a little bit ahead of you and ask them for their advice. So when I started my first business, I started interviewing entrepreneurs, firstly for my own blog and then later for a magazine. And that really inspired me a lot. So you had a meeting and then you could learn from them. And that was kind of my MBA.
So it's also, to summarize it, know what you don't like, start slow, focus on the steps to slowly change and then learn from people that are already there.
Yeah, so learn from people that are already there. And then also define your own values and like the things that you really want to do. So I bought a book called Business Model You. So
it's I love it.
It's not about the business model of a company, but your own business model. So I went to my childhood experiences, writing down the things that I'd like to do. But also in my job, I wrote down the things that I really liked about it. So at McKinsey, I could facilitate 20 students from the Dutch National Think Tank. I really like group facilitation. And I wrote down three key values. So create, connect, discover. So I want to create something new. So not join an existing organization. I wanted to connect people and I wanted to discover. So my first business was a travel company that I created where we connect people to travel together and they could discover the world. So this company came out of my core values.
Amazing. Let's jump to the topic vision, because I think it's so important to have a vision for your life, right?
Yeah.
To have some guidance. Also, like, not only for people who want to be an entrepreneur, but also like for everyone, right? You're leading these vision retreats. So first, I want to know from you, like, what excites you about this topic, vision?
So when I meet people, I'm always interested and excited about what drives them, what motivates them, and what they want to get out of life. So one of my big passions is travel, and I always like to meet strangers and really understand why they do the things that they do. So for instance, in this case, I'll be curious, you know, why are you running a podcast? I'll be curious, why is he running a podcast studio? So that's my natural curiosity. And I also think that your life experiences shape your worldview. For me, an important life experience has been that when I was 3 months old, we moved to Tanzania in East Africa, where my parents were going to work as doctors. So they had a vision going to East Africa and doing something good for the world and also going on a bit of an adventure. But when we were living there, unfortunately, we had a car accident where my mom passed away.
Oh, so sorry to hear.
Yeah, so there was a sudden change. And so she passed away when she was 31 and I was one at the time. And because of that experience, I've always had this idea, I never know how old I will become. You know, maybe I only have 31 years. So I always had this motivation to follow my curiosity in the moment or to follow my vision and not to wait until the future, not wait for my retirement. And I think that's kind of integrated in my DNA because I've always been doing these things. I don't know, travel, setting up businesses, interviewing people. Sometimes it might have inspired other people that maybe had regular jobs like, oh, how do you do all these things? Or why do you do all these things? But that's for me kind of a motivation. And that's maybe also what I want to bring to the world. So by organizing these vision retreats, I help people to take a step back, to reflect on their life, to reflect on what they really want to do. And I can encourage them to do it now instead of waiting until they have a certain amount of money.
Or retirement.
Until retirement, until they have done enough courses. And I also would like to support people in removing their own blockages. So I think there's three that I see most often. So it's either I don't have the money yet. Two, maybe a self-doubt. I don't have enough courses yet. I'm not good enough yet. And then three, it's other people's opinions. So what I'm passionate about is understanding what people drives, why they're motivated. And I'm motivated to support them in doing it right now, because what I've shared earlier. And I'm also interested in supporting them to understand the blockages and then helping them to overcome it. And I think there my McKinsey background comes in useful, because what you learn there is really to pinpoint certain bottlenecks and then come up with creative but also tangible solutions. So my consulting background is still there in the retreats.
I really believe everything what we do in life, where we end up, you know, every job, every connection somehow serves us again later in life. So it's like nothing is lost, you know. That's my belief. Every skill that you learn, even if it's to play the flute, at some point you will use it in the future. So it will come together.
Steve Jobs, of course, he was a bit of a controversial man, but I really like the part of his commencement speech where he says you can only connect the dots looking backwards, not looking forward.
So true.
And for me, in the vision retreats, many of my backgrounds come together, from consulting to entrepreneurship to coaching, but also my own life experience that has shaped me and also has shaped my belief that it's important to do things right now.
I think this is such a good message, especially for people that, you know, want to change something in their lives. Doesn't matter if it's career or private life, but when they're going through change, it's such a good input to say, okay, maybe today you don't see it, but when you look back, whatever you did, it was not for nothing. You're not ruining your career if you take a new path now, or if you're stepping out from a situation in your private life and you want to move somewhere else. You're not messing up your whole life. No. Because later when you look back, you will see it makes all sense.
I think that's absolutely the case. And sometimes I feel that people overestimate the risk of certain things. Of course, it's important to put it in perspective. If you live in Central Africa and you have like $1 a day, you can maybe not make any change because you're fighting to survive. But most likely people listening to this podcast have a bit more privilege. I think it's nice to try things out and to learn. And recently at the retreat, Stephanie van der Wiel, who also lives in Irisaray, she was our retreat photographer. And for 10 years, she traveled the world with Jimmy Nelson, who's a renowned photographer. And she was a lawyer in the past, and then she became a photographer. And at some point, she could work with this famous man and travel the entire world. She said at the retreat, you do not need to be great to start. You need to start to be great.
Wow, that's powerful. I really like that.
It's a good reminder, right?
Yeah, absolutely. What would you say do many people struggle to find their vision?
I think also what I learned from interviewing all these people in the Soul Kitchen is one person, she's a yogi and a film documentary maker, and her recipe for life is walk in the forest. You really need to slow down to find your vision. So it can be a Vipassana retreat, it can be walking in nature, it can be reflecting, can be journaling. And I think it's important to maybe do it in a place where you're not connected to people that already know you or have a certain belief about you, to really go inward and to reflect on your core values and your vision. Then I believe it's also beneficial. There are certain programs. Of course, I'm hosting vision retreats, but I want to advertise also a few other things. Lifebook program of Mind Valley. It's a really cool program where you can explore 12 areas of your life. And there's Michael Beckwith, who has a vision meditation. So you just lie on your bed and you're guided on a visualized meditation. He asks questions like, how does the new version of you look like? What are the things that you want to let go of? It's also a powerful question. So there's different tools for it. I'm not sure if I'm answering your question. I forgot your question. It happens sometimes in podcasting.
All right. I mean, you're giving already advice. This is great. I think this already, you know, helps people that don't know their vision.
Yeah.
So I actually asked, why do you think that people are struggling to find their vision?
That's a good question. I'm a bit of a dreamer, so sometimes. Okay, so I was answering. So the struggle is that people are in a certain situation, but they don't take time to slow down. So I meet a lot of people that are on a certain job and they know they want to change, but they don't really take time to slow down. Then I think these three barriers that I already mentioned, so they feel I don't have the money. They have self-doubt. So they might feel something like, oh, I want to become a public speaker, but they doubt their English skills. I had one person, she commented on me, oh, it's so cool that you're doing this podcast, despite the fact that you have like a Dutch accent in your English. And then didn't even think about it, like, okay, let's go. But she was like, oh, I first need to do an English course to become a podcast host. And then the third one is other people's opinions. And I think that's a big struggle. They might have an idea about something like, oh, what would other people think about it? So I think those are the three key barriers. And I feel that it may be Western society, there's a lot of focus on productivity, and maybe people are scared to enter the field of not knowing. It's always like, what do you do? And then people want to have an answer. I think if you enter this field of not knowing, imagine people ask you, what do you do? You say, at this moment, I don't know. I'm contemplating on my vision.
It feels weird, right?
It feels weird. Yeah. So I think that's also why there's a struggle, because maybe in our society, we want to pretend that we always know.
So I think during COVID, there was a time where people were working from home, having more time for themselves. Mm-hmm. And I felt, yeah, a lot of people started to change as well. And I think that's such an important point that you've mentioned, taking time for yourself to connect with yourself.
I think it's important. I think during COVID, for me, a lot of social activities have been eliminated. So yeah, more time to go inward was actually also an opportunity. How did you change during COVID?
Oh, actually, I meditated a lot and I connected a lot more with nature, because I had, let's say, opportunity to work from home. And my lunch breaks were in the forest. And I started much earlier, finished earlier. So I walked a lot in a forest. I meditated, connected with nature. And a lot of new things came up, actually. So new ideas, but also things I thought, oh, I should work on that. You know, I want to optimize in this area, or things from childhood where I was like, oh, maybe I should invest more time to understand myself better. What type of, like, what kind of an influence, for example, certain situation, as you mentioned, your mother, I lost my dad. So I thought, interesting, you know, I see some blockages in my life, and it can be connected to childhood. Mm-hmm. So I dig deeper, actually, into certain areas of my life to improve my life. And I thought before, I had time to meditate, but not that much, right? Because when you're commuting, or when you're in your routine, you don't really think about that.
No, that's absolutely true. So I think when you take time to slow down, you can reflect deeper, reflect on your childhood experiences, reflect on your core values. And I think it's a big risk that we go through life without doing this exercise. So at school, they don't teach you it. At university, they don't teach you it. Then you go to your first job and you continue. And that's also my aspiration for what I want to offer at Soul Kitchen, this combination of inner work and self-reflection, but connected to reality. You know, like, what's your vision for what you want to bring into the real life? Also have a bit of a strategic plan and an action plan for it.
My last podcast guest, he actually talked about the forest as well as your guest from the podcast you mentioned before. And it's very interesting because it was also like, nature heals you, right? If you have stress, go to nature and it will heal you. So I really believe in that as well, that when you spend a lot of time in nature, your system, your nervous system regulates itself again, and you get new insights about your life. So maybe that's also a good recipe, how to find your vision.
I think it's a
great, and you're stuck.
I think it's a great recipe, and I have two paths that I'm committed to. So one is a path in the Netherlands from the north to the south. It's a 500 kilometers, and once every few months I walk it with my aunt. So we take a one day nature, and then for three times I've been to Santiago de Compostela. So once I did like 4 weeks, and the other two times 2 weeks. And for me, the simplicity of just walking with your backpack, just being in nature and meeting people from all walks of life, I find so inspiring. And it also helps me to challenge my perspectives and to kind of zoom out from life. And for me, I've always interwoven this in my life, in my career, or in my entrepreneurial journey.
It's amazing. How do you integrate like your personal vision to your company vision? I guess you have a holistic vision, right? I think that should be the goal at the end. I feel like sometimes people struggle because they have a vision for their private life. They're like, oh, I want to be a parent. I want to be a good partner. I want to travel the world. When you're a leader, you also have a company vision, right? Yeah. How do you align that?
I will share my personal vision, then I'll share how I think you can align it. So my personal vision is to support people in realizing their dreams and stepping into the boldest vision that they can have. And I've defined four themes that I would like to work in. So it's travel, it's entrepreneurship, it's social impact, and it's personal development. And the ventures that I've built, they're all connected to the themes. So one was a travel business, one was a co-working space, one is around personal development. So I kind of have my own, let's say, vision and the themes that I want to work in. And how people can develop it, I think, you know, go back to your childhood. What are the things that you were excited about? What are the things that light you up? Was it theater? Was it singing? Was it playing games? Was it coaching people? And then also go to your childhood experience and reflect what was painful. What was challenging? What was tough? What were the things that have shaped you? And then based on that, define your key values and your key talents. Like, what is it that you want to bring into the world? What type of people do you want to serve? What type of themes do you want to work on? And then you have a bit this vision map based on your inner world. And then later you can either create this in the form of a company or a project or a podcast, or if you prefer to be employed, because there's nothing wrong with being employed. I mean, I'm an entrepreneur, but I'm not here to preach that people should do the same. You can apply to companies that maybe share these values or share these visions. And then I think you're a little bit more intentional when you enter the job market. So that's for me how it can be aligned. And then also maybe visualize how you want to feel. Do you want to work in nature or inside a building? Do you want to work alone? Do you want to work with other people? But I think this inner reflection is where it starts. And from a practical point of view, because at the end of the day, there's also bills to pay, I think it's important to understand your core a quality that you can monetize. So in my case, group facilitation is something that I can always monetize. But like your core thing that you can monetize. And if you have that clear, then you can either do that or you can do passion projects on the side. But if you don't have this core, I think maybe maybe you don't have a stability. I know, does that resonate with you?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I think when you're really clear, I also believe in that, go back to your childhood, because I think we get reconditioned during our lives, right? Maybe we have a dream when we were kids, or we're really good in something, and then, yeah, adulthood kicks in and school, and like also you get rated and people have an opinion about your skills, right? So we change and we somehow maybe adapt a lot of things. They're not lost. They're somewhere in childhood. So I really believe in that as well. And this being playful again, being open to reconnect what's within us.
Yeah. I think it's very important to have that clear. And speaking about money, at some point, your personal vision needs to be connected with money because there's bills to pay. But there's also a Tantra teacher, David Daida, he inspired me. He asked this question, what is your purpose if money would not play a role? And to really sit with that question for a while. And then your counter mind can be, oh, but that's not relevant because I need to make money. I need to think about how I make money. But he says, no, okay, pause that for a while and really go deep, like what really excites you if money would not play a role. But I think that's a really powerful question. And first sit with it, maybe take 10 days to sit with it, answer it for yourself. And then the next 10 days you can see, can you connect this to money? That it could turn into a job. But sometimes your purpose is not your money thing. I saw someone online and she found out that her purpose is to hug young girls and tell them everything is going to be all right.
Oh, that's so beautiful.
Everything is going to be all right. And that's her purpose.
That's so beautiful.
Because that's what she wants to do if money doesn't play a role. And then, of course, when she's not hugging young girls, she has a job. So I think it's also a pitfall. You asked about pitfalls to always think that your vision needs to be connected to how you make money. Maybe you want to disconnect that. You work in a restaurant for your money and you have some other type of vision that you're excited about. So I think that's very important. And during the retreats, I always try to make money explicit because not everyone likes to talk about it, but then secretly it's there. And then you're not having this holistic picture.
Yeah, I think it's so good that you say that. I remember I was on one of your vision dinners. Recently, and I talked with a girl, you know, and I thought very often we think vision is about, yeah, money, about career, about something, you know, that you can monetize. And when we had this beautiful discussion about our individual visions, she mentioned her vision for the next years is to become an amazing mother and to be there for her child. And I thought that's so beautiful, you know, it doesn't have to be something that is job related, but at the same time, I see the connect because you have to decide. So when your private vision, for example, is to be there full time for your child, of course, then you say no to certain jobs, for example, right? Yeah. So it goes hand in hand.
I think it goes hand in hand indeed. And the clearer you are about your vision, the clearer you are about what you say no to. Once you say no more often, you have more time and space for the things you want to do.
I have a question. When we go back to the change topic, I mean, we are changing every 7 years, right? There is a saying like every 7 years, our body is changing. But also in general, change happens internally, but also externally. Life gives you sometimes challenges. How often would you say should someone sit down and reflect on his or her vision?
I think it really depends on the person that you are. So next week, I have the honor to be the ceremonial host of two people that are going to marry. One of my best friends interviewed them yesterday to dig deeper into their lives. And one of their core values is loyalty. So they have been with the same employer for a long time. They have been in the same relationship for 20 years. And I feel they're very happy about it. So a person like that maybe has less a desire to reflect on the vision than maybe some other humans. My MBTI is ENFP. And I tend to change quite often. So for me, I would say it's good once a year kind of to reflect on the vision for the year. And then whenever you feel like it. So sometimes I think when you're in the flow, you're just going and not overthinking things. But whenever you feel a change is needed, I think then it's important. So I don't think there's a certain number to it, but it's more, yeah, you can feel it whether you want to change something.
How often are you reflecting on your vision?
So I like to do like a yearly check-in and kind of write down my ideas for the year. And at this moment, I don't want to think more than 1 year ahead. So for 2024, I'm committed to building this co-living in Erizaira. I'm committed to my podcast and I'm committed to the vision retreats. And I want to see what kind of is coming from there. But let's say if I look at really moments of reflection, I think was when I applied to a consulting job. Then from consulting to startup was a big one. Then from when my relationship finished in Amsterdam to nomadic living. And then maybe from nomadic living to, let's say, my new life here. So I had this four pivotal moments in the past 15 years. So in my case, maybe once every 4 years on average.
But you reflect every year, you do check-ins.
For me, it's more integrated in my day-to-day. You invited me for this podcast. Mm-hmm. So this morning I was sitting in a local cafe and it's like, this is a great opportunity for me. Why not reflect a little bit on what my intention is for today or what I want to share in the podcast. So for me, I feel that's integrated, like what's my vision for this podcast, what's my intention for today. But definitely once a year, I do a little bit more in-depth like vision reflection.
I got really inspired by a couple I met recently. They sit down every month where they actually share their separate visions, but they also align their common visions, or like try to bring their visions together. And every month they do check-ins about where are we, what do we want to add on our month? What do we want to change? How do we want to adjust? When I saw there, they had a vision board for this year. So I got so inspired. I thought, wow, this is actually so beautiful.
Yeah.
If you manage to do that, as a couple. It's really powerful, I think.
Yeah, I think it's really cool. Yeah, I think with relationships, I'm not an expert in that, but it can definitely be good to have these intentional conversations about what you wanna do. And in my future relationship, for me, it's definitely important to have a shared vision, to be crystal clear about it.
Yeah, I think actually that's the holistic part again, right? You're looking at the professional world. You're looking at your private life. Mm-hmm. To align also with the people around you.
Yeah.
I guess it has also a big influence what type of people you choose in your inner circle, where you feel like, I want to be in this community, I want to be with these type of people, or I want to apply for these jobs, or I want to work with these facilitators, whatever it is, right? Yeah. So you're shaping your world.
I think a vision has different layers. So you can define a vision for yourself, for your family and friends, for your community, maybe for your business, for the impact you want to have on the world. And sometimes one needs more attention than the other. And I felt very inspired by this life book program of Mind Valley, where you're invited to reflect on 12 areas of your life, but really reflect on what's your vision for your health. Mm-hmm. What's your vision for your impact? What's your vision for your finances? What's your vision for where you want to live? And yeah, not often we reflect on these things. So it was very inspiring to me.
Sounds great. Do you have a last word, a sum up, an advice before we finish? Something like a word that you want to give to our listeners?
I would
the
say...
The secret weapon.
I would say two things, take time to slow down. And then two, follow your curiosity. I mean, what is it that you're excited about today? What are you curious about today? Don't overthink it. Just explore that curiosity.
Beautiful. I love that. Thank you so much, Jasper. Thank you for listening to us today.